chicken pay it. It's all about pay. Who's gonna make it? I am the game. You don't wanna play me. I am control. No way you can shake me. I am heavy debt. No way you can pay me. I am the pain, and I know you can't take me. Look over your shoulder, ready to run like a crazy thing from a smoking gun. I am the game, and I make the rules. So move on out, you can die like a fool. Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be. Come on over, sucker, why don't you ask me? Don't you forget there's a price you can pay. Cause I am the game and I want to play.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Had a couple technical difficulties to start off, but we're here rolling. How's everyone doing tonight? I'm your host, humble, gracious, and sexy as always, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my brother Doug.
What's up, Daniel?
Yo.
I'm here with Eric. Before we let Doug get any jabs in, let's go right to the plugs. Make sure every Wednesday and Friday after AEW Dynamite, or is Dynamite still on Wednesdays or no?
Yes, Dynamite is on Wednesday.
So Dynamite's on Wednesday. So after Dynamite and SmackDown, respectively, I don't know what they're doing for Rampage, if they're still going out at 10. We haven't really communicated with them much lately, so we'll find that out.
I have an update.
Okay.
Boxman and Smart are not doing shows for wrestling starting September. The first Friday of September, they're doing Hollywood Hangout. So
they're
Wednesday will
what?
Be their wrestling show, and Friday will be their movie show.
Oh, never got invited back. Thanks, Box.
Yep.
Okay. Let's,
and he mentioned you on the air, so I'll tell you later.
Okay. But, yeah, make sure to check those guys out. Great gentlemen. Make sure to check us out every 6:30. Or 6:34, depending on what we can do. On Fridays here on Blog Talk and, you know, Spotify and all that good stuff. Check us out, Unscripted Wrestling. Saturdays, we got Unscripted Unlimited. Times vary from 6 to 8 usually. And Sundays at 3 p.m., we got Scaredy Cats, mine and Mindy's Horror Show. We're going to be doing the brand new Candyman. We're going to go see it tomorrow and review it for you guys on Sunday. So that'll be a big one. We got a lot of shows coming up. You want to get into a little bit what we got going?
All right, so next week we're going to be doing an Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio feud retrospective. That's next week, September 3rd, September 10th. We're going to be doing the September 9th, 1996 episode of WCW Monday Nitro. September 17th, there will be no show. Because on September 18th, we have to get up early. Because on September 18th, we will be at the Merchantville, New Jersey Toy Fair from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I mean, we're going to be there at 7 o'clock setting up. But from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., so we'll be doing that. September 24th, you had something planned, right, Dan?
Yes.
Are you still working on it, right? Are you still working on it?
On the spot,
you...
I love it. Yes. I can indulge a little information. Thanks, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
We will be doing company retrospectives. It's going to be a little something new. We got into AEW a little like a year ago, but we didn't really dive deep. We're going to be really diving deep into a company, its biggest programs, its biggest feuds, the ownership, maybe the rise and fall if it didn't work out. And this is an idea I thought of a couple weeks ago and I've kind of been cultivating. And the first ever thing we're going to do, the first ever company we're going to get into is ECW. So we're going to do an ECW retrospective on September 24th.
Beautiful.
We'll talk about the rise, the fall, the wonderful Paul Heyman and his great business and the bouncing of the checks. We'll talk about the great talent, the feud, Sandman and Raven, the Raven and Tommy Dreamer, Taz and Sabu. So
RVD, Jerry Lynn.
Yes, we will be talking about everything ECW, and we're going to try to dive into the whole company. It's going to be a little different from our show retrospectives. We're not just going to be going after the show, we're going to be really talking about the whole company and everything that was involved in it. So that'll be fun.
All right,
that should be fun.
That's September 24th. And then we'll get into the October shows once we get closer to October, once I figure out what the fuck we're doing.
Sounds good. All right, you want to hit off some news?
I did, but then our technical difficulties didn't really put me in a news mood. I mean, we can talk about... I mean, there is one thing that kind of... It didn't necessarily bug me. I think the people's reaction kind of bugged me. Is that there's two wrestling legends out there who were very critical about parts of AEW this week. Well, one is a legend in his own mind.
Booker T.
Yes, and the other one is only a legend because he's been in the business for 44 years, and that's Bobby Fulton of the Fantastics.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, the only person in the wrestling business Jim Cornette has never shit on.
There you go, Bobby.
So he's made it big time. First we'll get the useless one out of the way, which is Booker T.
Yeah. By the way, for people that don't know, CM Punk debuted. It was a big deal. Eric's still coming. We'll get into it.
Yeah, which is why he let me in. I told him to try to get me in. So CM Punk debuted last week and cut this promo. It was a decent promo. I mean, to be honest with you, it was too long for me. But, you know, he came in, cut his promo. Booker T didn't like it. Booker T said that he struck out with the promo because he mentioned WWE. He never mentioned WWE by name. Okay?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and people are shitting on Booker, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with people shitting on people I don't like.
Yeah.
Mainly because I do it. So, but people have to remember, Booker's a WWE stooge. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did go on the AEW cruise and shit, and he told them to suck it if they have a problem. I don't know if he's a stooge. I honestly, if you've heard this is what I boil it down to, he's got a grudge against CM Punk. If you've heard the way he's talked about CM Punk, and I've heard him talk about him in multiple interviews, yeah, he ran away with his tail tucked, and then he got his ass whooped in the UFC. I've heard Booker talk about he don't like Punk.
Yeah, because Punk walked away.
Yeah, and that bothers a lot of people that have not walked away.
Yeah, and it bothered me, and I've never even walked to it.
Yeah.
All right? It bothered me that he walked away. But unfortunately, you know, Punk had the right to do so. I mean, it was his right. It was his prerogative. He was not happy.
No.
And when you're not happy, and anybody that's ever left a job, you know, on their own without getting fired, can attest to this. If you're not happy, as long as you have a backup plan or have, you know, whatever, or, you know, you're going to be fine. If you're not happy at your job, leave.
Yes.
Punk did.
But put in your 2 weeks notice and be respectable and be, you know, don't burn that bridge. He walked out and burned a bridge.
Right. Which is the problem I had with him. He did burn that bridge.
Cause as much as he wants to talk about how he cares about the guys and he cares about the people, he let the people down. He let the guys in the back down that worked their asses off. He let all those people, and I know he kind of apologized to them on AEW, and he said it wasn't against them, but fuck you, it was. You had all those people, Daniel Bryan, these people that are working their asses off and trying their best, and you are a whiny little bitch, and you don't get your main event at WrestleMania, and you don't want to wrestle Triple H again, so you walk away. I'm tired of backing up CM Punk. I want to hear what you have to say about it, Eric, and I don't want you to pull any punches because I've seen your Facebook posts and you've had a lot to say. So I would like you to keep the same energy for this podcast. How did you feel about CM Punk on Rampage?
I thought CM Punk looks more happier now. I mean, he was out for 7 years. It feels like he has that passion for wrestling again. And he probably lost during probably, what, 2013, 2014-ish before he left. And I understand why he left, and he should have done it a better way. And I'll say that. But he also did apologize. I mean, and it did work out for Daniel Bryan at the end. I mean, he got his WrestleMania moment. So, did I miss anything I posted or anything? Is there anything in particular?
I mean, it's a lot shorter because I've been seeing a lot of paragraphs from you, bud. You've been giving it to people, telling them how this is such a big deal. I'd kind of like you to replicate that here for our audience. Why is this such a big deal? Why does this mean so much to wrestling? Why, as a fan who has not watched wrestling, because you have not enjoyed wrestling for a while, Eric, I know this. Why did that bring the passion back into you? Why did you watch that and you're like, I want to see this and I want to see more of this? What about that brought that into you? Now I'm just asking. I'm not grilling.
It was just that energy that he had and that passion with the crowd. It just felt like attitude era. I mean, I haven't had that passion since, 2014, since Daniel Bryan got that push. Wrestling hasn't felt the same for me, at least, since then. I don't know why, but he just brought in different energy that we haven't seen in a while.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I will say that was nothing compared to the pipe bomb, though. Like, I didn't feel the way I felt when he did the pipe bomb.
Oh, no.
To see him. And him
and
Darby,
I know he was at home, and of course he was going to get a big pop. But it just felt nice. It just felt... Everybody was happy. You saw that guy crying. I made fun of him at first, but I realized he was just happy. You just saw happy fans.
You're right.
And you do get that in WWE, too. And I'm not knocking WWE like that, but there was just something different about the way he was received. And I don't – it's just weird to describe.
Now, can I finally say, and I agree with everything you just said, I'm about to shit on Punk, but it's just because I'm a huge CM Punk fan. He really hurt my feelings by this whole thing. I love that he's back. I will watch what I can and see him, and I'm excited for it. I will not say that he came back for the love of wrestling. I will say that he came back for the love of a fat paycheck, because Tony Khan will pay any guy that used to draw anything. And I like Tony Khan a little bit, but he's got deep wallets and he's not afraid to use it. Punk, he might love wrestling. He might love this. He might only came back on the right terms or whatever. But come on. They offered him a shit ton of money. The price was right. He was finally ready. His UFC money was running a little low. His indie horror movie fucking money was running a little low. So he had to come back and get a check. That's what I would boil it down to. It's not for the love of wrestling, because you would have that love. AEW's been around for 2 years now, almost. Why come back now? Especially when Tony Khan has said he wanted to build the company around him at first and start it with him. And it's not like they got very successful and he saw that they're doing great ratings. He's like, I'm going to come back. The money was finally right.
Okay, so...
I think it was partly... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Doug.
All right. Well, let me ask this. What WCW signing would you guys compare Punk's AEW signing to?
Bret Hart.
Okay. Dan?
That's what I was going to say, too.
You were going to say Brett?
Yeah.
I'm actually almost comparing this to Hogan.
Well,
oh,
and
wow.
The reason why is because I'm actually going to compare, when Daniel Bryan gets there, I'm actually going to compare that to Bret Hart.
That's fair.
Because...
Can I say why I compare it to Bret Hart? I mean, after you're done.
Well, go ahead.
Of course. I think it's Bret Hart because they're both... How old was Bret Hart when he came to WCW?
Bret Hart was 40.
Okay, so around the same age, and they both left WWE, WWF on bad terms, unquote. Because Bret got, I mean, they didn't leave in the same fashion, but they both felt they got screwed. And they're both big stars in their own mind sometimes. Yes,
and they
I
both take each other. They both take themselves too seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I'm putting Punk with.
What was
Bret
your
Hart
reading, Daniel?
Brett's a lot more. I mean, because mainly because he's a disgruntled ex-WWE employee. That's basically what Bret Hart is. Daniel Bryan's never been anti-WWE. I just think Daniel Bryan's a kid that actually loves wrestling. You cannot compare Punk's love and Brian's love because Brian has always stuck with it. Brian's been through the bullshit.
Yeah.
He's been through terrible booking. He sat there and smiled and tried to make it better, even tried to become a writer so he can make it better. He has a genuine heart and love for the business. I think he loves independent wrestling a little more than WWE, so I think that's why he wants to come back and do AEW and do something different. You have another burger.
Okay.
But... as far as this situation, I will watch Punk. I hope that he gives us the best of what he's got. I also haven't seen him in 7 years, and he wasn't the greatest worker when he was – like, he's a great worker, but he's a promo. He's not a match.
Yeah.
He can put on good matches, but he's not a Daniel Bryan caliber or a fucking Bret Hart caliber. He puts on maybe, like, 7-8-star matches. He can work, but he's not like AJ in the ring. Okay, he's a promo.
No.
Daniel, you and I have seen him wrestle live 3 times.
CM Punk?
Yeah. In 2006, we saw him wrestle Stevie Richards.
Yeah.
In 2008, we saw him wrestle Rey Mysterio. In 2013, we saw him wrestle Ryback. Which match do you think he wrestled better in?
Well, was the Ryback in a pay-per-view?
Yeah, Battleground.
Oh, yeah, that was a Battleground. And that was heel right back, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd probably say the Mysterio match because that's the only one he probably – well, Richards is a good worker, but he didn't like Ryback. He hated the Ryback stuff.
Yeah.
Because Ryback sucked. It was dangerous.
Exactly. See – AEW, and I think this is actually some of the reason why I like AEW, because I like a lot of this clusterfuck bullshit. AEW is very WCW to me.
Yeah. That's what's turned me off.
WCW had its good points, though.
It did. But I haven't seen as many in AEW. I'm sorry, I wanted to be on the train. I know I've shit on it a couple weeks now, but there's nothing I was more invested in than AEW wrestling-wise, and they just haven't really done anything for me yet. Maybe this Punk shit will change it. Who knows?
I mean, I think the match between Darby and Punk is going to be really good.
Yeah.
I mean,
he better do the right thing and put Darby over, and hopefully the crowd doesn't turn on Darby and turn into pieces of shit just because their boy's back.
And I was thinking about that, too. Will Punk put him over in his hometown? And some fans are arguing that he shouldn't lose his first match back.
If it's against Darby, he should.
I think he should. I think he should put Darby over. Because what he said in the promo is he's basically here to help the young guys. So he has to put him over if he's going to be true to that statement.
But Punk is also very selfish.
Oh, yeah. I mean, trust me, if there was sort of Daniel Bryan's, if this were Daniel Bryan going into this against Darby, Darby'd be going over.
Yeah.
Because Daniel Bryan is one of the most unselfish people on the face of the planet.
But if you want to boil everything that went down with WWE, yes, the booking was terrible. Yes, there's internal problems, but he left because they wouldn't give him a WrestleMania main event. That's why he left, because that's the only thing he ever wanted. He knew that was the big deal, and they would never do it for him, even when he deserved it. So I understand why he left, but that's why he left. All right, let's move on to SummerSlam. All
right. So
and we could talk to this all day, but we have to move on.
Yeah. We'll get into the Bobby Fulton thing, I think, another time.
Yeah. And also, this last SummerSlam was pretty good. We watched it last week.
Yeah,
I watched it last night. So.
The one that just happened.
Yeah, the 2021, right?
Yeah. I think it's still 2021.
Yeah.
All right, boys. We're in Raleigh, North Carolina, at the Raleigh Entertainment and Sports Arena. Our attendance is 17,002 people, or $2, or yeah, two people. The buy rate was $570.
$570,000.
No, it was 570. It was a bad pay-per-view. Yes, 570K. So business was still hot. Even without Austin, there's a lot of big feuds going into this thing. Pretty much, and we were talking about this, Doug, it kind of felt like everything had a story, even thrown together shit.
Yeah. And that, I think, was the beauty part of it, is that everything felt important, from the opener to the main event, because everything just had that build. And you know, there were a few matches. I mean, there were a few matches, you know, that had that movie quality, like, trailer to it.
Yeah.
You know, the video package of Waller and Taz had a video package. Benoit Jericho had a video package. I'm pretty sure TLC had one. Undertaker and Kane, I think, had one too, right?
Yeah. Even the Thong Stigface match had a few vignettes before. I mean, it wasn't really...
Yeah, I mean, well...
It was clips of what had
happened. They kept talking about... They talked about every match. They brought up why it was happening.
Yeah. It was really good.
And I think that's like the best part about it, I think, is that, like, when you... as long as, like, everything has a story, like, if everything feels like it has a purpose, it's going to be good.
Yeah. And to get right into it, match one, we have Right to Censor. We have Bull Buchanan, the Good Father, and the Leader, Stephen Richards, against Too Cool, which consists of Grandmaster Sexay, R.I.P., Rikishe, and Scotty Too Hotty, R.I.P. too, right? Scotty Too Hotty.
No, Scotty's still alive.
Scott Taylor's still alive? Okay.
I mean, you may have just killed him by saying that.
Sorry, Scotty. With Mandy and Victoria, two fabulous hosts. Victoria ended up having a really good career after that. She might have had one of the better careers in this match. No, she didn't. But she did well.
Probably had a better career than Bolt.
Yeah, you had a better career. Right to Censor. As a heel group in the Attitude Era, I always thought they were kind of genius. Yes, they were very annoying, but I thought they were genius that they were this censorship, you know, no nudity, no drug talk, no, we don't like the violence, because that's what everyone loved about this era, except for, you know, people that aren't into that. But the people that are watching this like that. So the Stone Cold fans, the DX fans, they're going to hate these guys right away, right?
Yeah.
What did you think of Right to Censor as a heel group? And taking the Godfather and turning him into the Good Father, and then what they did with Val and shit.
I actually, like, that is a way to get heat. And, like, when you are a heel or a heel faction, you need to learn to get heat. And that's what these guys did. And I thought they were very good at it. I mean, Stephen Richards was very annoying.
Yeah, but I think it's the best Stevie Richards we've ever gotten in WWE, at least.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I prefer his face with a goatee. because that is one big ass fucking ugly
horse face.
Yeah. That face needs a beard or a goatee on it.
I liked him though. During this era, I thought this could have been a main event act. Maybe not a title run, but it could have been
a not a title run, but they could have done a lot more stuff with Rock than they did.
Mm-hmm. Like, they were just so good at... And if Austin was around, these are perfect heels to go against Austin.
Austin never really had, like, much interaction with him.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But they were all about censorship, and he would have been, fuck you.
Yeah.
He would have been good. Now, something about Rikishi... Now, I don't know what there is about a 350-some-odd Hawaiian man or Samoan man in a diaper shaking his ass at people, but he's cool. I was just watching it, and he was coming out, and he's banging his head to the music, and I looked at my aunt Sharon, and I was like, for looking so absurd and on paper, you're like, this is an idiot. He looked cool. Like, he just, like, had that cool act with the glasses and stuff, the sunglasses.
Yeah. They fucked up by turning him heel.
Yeah. They were trying to do something bigger with him, but it didn't work. Very true. What did you think of this match, Eric?
I thought it was a good, fun opener. The right team went over. I've always liked Scotty Cuddy and Rikishi and, you know, Grandmaster. I thought they were a fun team. They remind me of kind of like the New Day. No. They were in the New Day before the New Day. A fun team. And you root for.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I thought it was a really good match. I mean, obviously, you know, as a fan of babyfaces, I prefer the babyface team to go over. But, you know, this was a good way for them to keep the heat. Because if you look at it now, see, back, you know, 14 years old, I still, like, wasn't, like, fully understanding the business yet.
Yeah.
But now it's just like, okay, yes, you know, you always want the story to be the baby face goes over. However, do you want to kill the heel act right away? Probably not.
Yeah. I agree completely. I think the right team won because too cool is a team that can lose because they're too cool. They can take a loss because you're always going to cheer for them the next day. You know, it's not like Rikishi's stock got ruined here. And it was good to keep the win streak going for the right to censor. I thought it was a decent opener too, man. I think as far as stars, I would probably give it a decent 6.5. And I thought it was in a good way, you know. What do you think? What are you rating it?
I'll give it a 6.
Give it the old 6 jab? All righty. Sure. Doug's going to give it a 6 as well. We got 6s all around. Now let's move on to what I thought was the most underrated match on this card. I watched this the other day, and I was thoroughly entertained by it, especially because it was just thrown together.
Well, they had had their problems since, like, right after the last pay-per-view.
Yeah, but you said the match was scrapped together. They weren't going to do the match yet, but they ended up doing the match.
Yeah, because...
That's what you said to me.
That's fucking wrong, Bob.
Well, he hadn't said it. He just said the next match, so yeah. I didn't know what he was.
Right.
He would have got to that.
The match did just, because they made the match, which was weird that they do like a 10-match card like in this era. But, like, yeah, the match was made. I mean, they had started kind of building the match, like, right after the last pay-per-view.
All right.
But yeah, the match wasn't made actually till like the SmackDown before, because they were technically still a tag team. I think they wrestled Edge and Christian like either on Raw or on SmackDown the week before. So they were trying to win the tag titles.
Yeah, and I think that this cemented the breakup, right?
Yeah.
Because I just loved it. To me, it was only 4 minutes and 31 hot seconds, but I thought it was very entertaining start to finish. It felt like a nice match. It wasn't too much yet. It was building the pay-per-view. I think this pay-per-view was paced perfectly well. I thought the matches were in great order the way they were. And this was a nice, like, we're getting you ready. You know, we're getting you hyped up a little bit. You see two DX members. X-Pac cheats the win with the low blow. And Road Dogg kind of does baby face after and drops his ass. And I was invested in this one. What do you think, Gary?
I thought it was a good match, too. Good. How many minutes was this?
This was about four.
4:31.
I thought it was a good match for what it was. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just a good, entertaining match. So I would give it a 5.
What would you give it, Doug?
I like this match, too, so I'm going to give it a... I'm going to give it a 5.5.
I'm going 7. I really like this one. It caught my attention for a while. And I really like this one. I thought this was an underrated one on the card. Okay, moving on to Eddie Guerrero and Chyna versus Trish and Val Venus. Winner gets the belt. Intergender tag team match. We'll start with you, Eric. What did you think of Eric and Chyna's chemistry back then for being two people that are no longer with us anymore?
Rest in peace to both of them. Eddie and Chyna, I thought their chemistry was pretty good. I thought they were pretty cute together. I thought adorable together. I thought their chemistry was right on point. And it's sad that they're both no longer around. I liked the match. It was a good, solid match. I'm surprised. Yeah, this was Chyna's first singles title, right?
No, her second. She was the Intercontinental Champion before.
With Jericho, right? No, was it Jericho?
Yeah. Yeah, well, she won the title first and lost it to Jericho, and then her and Jericho ended up having to hold it together.
Yeah, that's what I remember about that. Yes. I like them together. So I thought it was a good solid match. I give it a 6.5. It was a fun match.
Yeah, I thought it was weird because these are four people that could probably go in the Hall of Fame someday. Val Venus is probably the lowest on that list, but it was cool. It was weird seeing Val go from post-porn star to this. And he was a little drunk.
Yeah.
He was a little dry without the porn star gimmick.
Here, yeah, he was very dry.
But Trish had that, you know, that personality. This is when she was just a piece of cheeks, which there's nothing wrong with that. And she got a lot better. She became one of the greatest women wrestlers of all time. But here, she was just a model. You know, she was just a girl that was there to look pretty. And Chyna was legit. Chyna back then, she might not have been the best worker, but every move she hit, you believe it. And she gets in there with the guys, man, and she can just do whatever the hell she wants. And she was fun to watch. And Eddie and his Latino Heat and him kind of being the smaller guy in the relationship and stuff and the little player. I just loved everything about this pairing. This match was good. Chyna winning the title was fine with Penn and Trish, and then Vale can still bitch because he didn't get pinned. I thought this match was good. I'm going 7 again.
I'm going to go 7.5 because I really did enjoy Eddie and Chyna's chemistry together, and I thought both of them had really good chemistry with Val.
Yeah.
I loved Eddie and Chyna together because that was so funny, and then, like, Eddie would always end up in trouble. Like, I'll never forget when Eddie beat Chyna in the first round of the King of the Ring.
Oh, that's my favorite. She got pissed.
She got upset. And then JR is like, I think Mama Cena's feelings got hurt. It's like, yeah, JR, you're not helping.
He hurt Mama Cena's feelings. Yeah, that was hilarious. But yeah, I thought this match was entertaining. Like I said, my only kind of gripe, I mean, Trish wasn't there yet as a worker, and Vale was pretty dry.
Right.
Just because he, I mean, the porn star gimmick, as corny as I thought it was, and I wasn't a fan of it, it did get over. And he was a big deal for a while there. But he was definitely losing steam around this time.
Because they really didn't know what else to do with him. I mean, he went as far as he was never going to be WWF champion.
No. And he's considered, like, one of the better guys back then. Now, like, people look back and, like, Vale was better than we give him credit for.
Right.
I think he's an absolute idiot now, though. He's got the worst takes on the internet. He's worse than Cornette. Absolute idiot. But let's move on. Jerry Lawler and Taz. Now, Jerry Lawler and Taz, I will say the one thing I liked about this card, and Paul Heyman probably looked at this card a little proud too, because his ECW guys, the Dudleys, Taz, Stevie, they got some play here. This is the best Taz has ever looked. Even though he got humiliated at the end and JR, you know, hit him with the candy jar, it was a good story, and it. JR always gets shit on, so it was nice seeing him win one for once. It was nice seeing Jerry Lawler and, you know, JR being like the two old farts that got one over. But I thought Taz's work was really good here, and I like he played the scumbag so well, and he played that thug life gimmick so well, and just bad motherfucker. I didn't think he needed to be dominant. I was cool with him losing here. I do think they should have did a lot more with him after that, though. This shouldn't have been like the end for him.
Well, I mean, he did beat Lawler the next month in Unforgiven.
Yeah, but nothing really came after that.
Well, it's also due to the fact that he did have neck problems.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing is that, like, a lot of people are going to look at, okay, he took the pile driver, but he got up and he just said, fuck you, as, like, you know, he just no-sold it.
I like that, though.
Well, here's the thing. He could no-sell that because he can't the pile driver's not going to hurt him. He does not have a neck.
Well, yeah, but that was part of the match, though. Like, the agent threw that in. That wasn't him being a dick.
You're right. No, that's what I'm saying is that, like, the agent basically said, no, flipped him off. Like, you can no-sell it because basically you have your head, and there's nothing – your head is basically just glued to your body. It's not attached by the neck. Like, you have – it's like Kenny Lehman. Kenny Lehman, you got a head, no neck.
Yeah, but he's got chins in the way.
Taz doesn't have the chins, but Taz just has a fat head.
You got a fat head.
yeah, but I do have a neck. You can actually tell by the fact that I have one.
But I did like Taz here. I thought he was cool, and I'd like to see more of him.
I thought he was a scumbag, but he played the scumbag real well.
Yeah, and it was great heel work.
Yeah, exactly. And then JR just being like, I told you we had a plan. And then I'll never forget the next night on Raw. Taz wrestled Blackman for the hardcore title. And, you know, I think Taz actually, like, got in JR and King's face. So JR and King, actually helped Blackman beat Taz and retain his title. And JR said, I know Blackman did not want our help, but we had to beat this son of a bitch.
Yeah. And I really love their chemistry, King and JR. They were just perfect together. And I love how King's like the bad guy heel, but he always had JR's back. There was just something about that to me that it's like, he's a dickhead, and they're going to give each other hell all the time. But if someone fucks with good old J.R. King standing up, and I always love that about them. That's how you and me are. You drive me fucking nuts, but if anyone touches you, they're getting their neck snapped.
Right.
And I like how King and J.R. kind of, because J.R.'s like adorable. Like, you don't want to hurt J.R. So when someone hurts J.R., they get heat.
Yeah, when Taz came out and did that opening promo and, you know, talk shit about JR, and King stood up and he's like, no, you sit your ass down, Lawler. And it's just like, no, why don't you just take your short little miserable ass to the
But I would give this match a 5. Well, actually, I'd give it a 6 based on entertainment value. It wasn't much of a match, but it was very entertaining. And seeing Jerry Lawler hit the pile driver is always nice because they're not allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah, I'd give it a 6 myself.
Sweet. Yeah, I'll give it a 6.
Okay. 6 is all around. Now let's go to a match that probably surprised most of us with old Shane Hardcore Mac and Steve Blackman for the Hardcore title. Shane McMahon has always been one of my favorite guys to watch. Even when I was a kid, I liked watching Shane because he always jumped off shit and he would always do crazy, even though he was like this kind of preppy kid, you know, but he didn't mind getting dirty. And he definitely didn't mind here. And I love the way this match was booked, right? Because Blackman legit looked $1 million the whole time. I could have watched Steve Blackman and Triple H in a main program after this. And watching this was like they needed to put him in the main event. Yes, he had very little personality, but Shane went out of his way to make this dude look good. Test and Albert came out and fucked Blackman up, and he still overcame the odds. And Shane McMahon's big fall, you don't look at it as, oh, he took a big risk. He did it in such a good way because he was running away from Blackman. And he's crawling up this thing. So he took a big fall, and he also looked like a pussy, which is hard to do. And the fact that he did that as a bad guy, that's great heel work.
Right.
He took a huge fall. We still look back at it, respect it. But the fact for that program that he did all that while still making himself look like a pussy, that's a great heel. And he made Blackman look like an absolute badass.
Right.
I loved everything about this match.
This was a really good match. And, you know, it's always good to have, like, the big spot or whatever. Blackman's not necessarily much of a big spot guy. He's more of a, I'm going to fucking kill you kind of guy.
Yeah.
But I was always a fan of Steve Blackman. I thought he was underrated, one of the most, one of the best, superstars in that Attitude Era. I mean, if I could have snuck him on the list for the top 10 greatest superstars to not be WWE champion, I would have, but I don't think I would have gotten away with it.
It bothers me because they look at him and the fact that he can't really cut a promo, and that's why he never made it, and it's like, okay. And you can take that as an excuse. But he didn't need it. He didn't need a promo. He could just sit there, look stone-faced, and you just look. This guy's legit. This guy looks like he's going to try to assassinate me. And there's something about it. I could have watched him in Triple H.
Here's the thing. He couldn't cut a promo, but he legit could fuck you. He legit could take your head off your shoulders and shove it up your ass and put it back on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Okay?
He's a tough guy.
And
I really wish he would have got a little bit more of a run.
I do too. But here's the thing. Because he couldn't cut a great promo, they weren't going to do shit with him. Okay, Bret Hart was one of the shittier promos. Bret couldn't talk.
Bret could talk in 1996 and 1997. Once Bret started bitching, because that's who Bret is, he's a whiner, a complainer, and a pussy. So once they're like, just go bitch out there. It was actually good shit, because he's good at bitching. So when he was bitching about the company and Shawn Michaels and everybody, and was like, life isn't fair, man, and he was like the heel, he was actually a pretty good promo. But I do agree with you, babyface, you know, Bret Hart, that's like, I'm going to try my best. That was a shitty promo. But heel Bret wasn't too bad.
And like Brock Lesnar, I don't know what the hell they're going to do with him now, because, you know, Heyman's with Reigns, so Heyman can't cut his promos for him.
Well, Brock's problem is he's one of those really, really big dudes, like really jacked, with a high-pitched voice. So he just doesn't sound intimidating.
That's why he doesn't like to talk.
Because he looks super tough, and then he's like, I'm going to kick your ass! It's like, oh, sure you are, Mighty Mouse. Get the fuck out of here. So it's kind of cool you have Paul Heyman there, Brock Lesnar! Because it puts more hype around it, and it's like, yeah! But that's my take on it. But Blackman didn't need it. He was a serious, stone-cold badass, and he didn't need a promo. And Shane McMahon was the talking here. And they complimented each other really well. I'm giving this 9 stars. For entertainment value, I'm giving this 9 stars.
I'm going to give it an 8.5.
I'll give it an 8. I really liked the match. I forgot how good this match was entertaining, especially I forgot that Shane McMahon went up all the way up and fell 50 feet. There's something about people falling that wrestling fans love. Have you noticed that? Like,
yeah.
They always, that's always one of the biggest moments in wrestling is somebody falling. Mick Foley, Shane, a couple times. Jeff Hardy, I just find that fascinating, how people love people falling.
Well, that's the thing. And Shane would, if we ever did a top 10 Daredevil list, he would be on my list. Because he doesn't get talked about like the Foleys and the Jeff Hardys, but he is a crazy motherfucker. He's jumped
yeah.
off a lot of shit. He let Kane put fucking jumper cables to his testicles. He'll go through some shit for entertainment value.
That's actually a good idea, Daniel. You should do that.
What, to put jumper cables on my testicles?
No. The top 10.
Daredevil's list? I wouldn't be opposed
yeah.
to it.
I would do it.
It'd
probably be a lot easier to put together than this next list we're working on.
I'm sure we'll forget about it in 2 months and Doug will present it as his idea. But let's move on. We got Christian.
I hate that you know my strategy.
We got. Did you give this one a rating?
I give it an 8.
I didn't. I gave it an 8.5. Yeah, I did. What the fuck am I talking about?
All right, we got two Chris's. Two Canadian Chris's. One's probably a lot better of a person than the other, but we won't get into that. Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit, 2 out of 3 falls match. Benoit wins 2-1. This is what for a 2 out of 3 falls match that only went 13 minutes, a lot of good work there. But you really can't expect anything
no.
else.
Right, no, they're really great workers. Do you think they have the WWE Network in hell?
All right.
I just want to make sure for when I get there I can subscribe.
That's not where
I love your back.
I know where, well, I was going to go somewhere else, but I had to.
It's
know,
not my, just because they've wrestled so much and they've been tag and done, these two have kind of been very simultaneous. They've been very close with each other their whole career. They were friends too, but they've always been like around each other in a certain
yeah.
way. Chris Benoit was a hell of a worker back then, and so was Chris Jericho. And just the fact that these guys...
It is.
It's not my favorite match between the two. That would go to Royal Rumble 2001, because you can't beat a Walls of Jericho
yeah.
on a ladder. But
or a fucking suicide dive into a chair shot.
Yeah, that was
crazy. Jerry Lawler had to play 6 times on the replay.
Yes, that was crazy. So it's not my favorite match between the two, but they've had so many matches. So this is one of their classic matches, and you should still watch it.
Here's the
very
funny thing.
Technical match.
If you say, okay, Benoit and Jericho going 2 out of 3 falls for the 2 out of 3 falls just for no reason, just to be on pay-per-view. Okay, cool. Sign me up. No, I want to watch it. This would have been one of those kind of rivalries that, like, it would have benefited, I think, from, like, a 3 stages of hell.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, because when I think about this pay-per-view, it really had everything. Like, you think about some pay-per-views, and it feels like there's missing something. This had everything for everybody. You had the underdog old fart story with Jerry Lawler and JR. You had the sex appeal with Cat and Terry and the thong that we'll get to. You had the badass, the crazy spot. You had the crazy spot with Shane McMahon. You had a whole match of crazy spots with the TLC, and if you love that type of hardcore, anything can happen shit, that's for you. You had a great, legitimate wrestling match with Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit, and you could even put Road Dogg and X-Pac in that category if you wanted to. You had a unique comedy love story with Eddie Guerrero and China, and you had one of the greater – you had that badass appeal with Kane and Undertaker, and you had one of the greater heel versus heel storylines ever with Kurt and Triple H. And you had the spectacle of The Rock. So this show really had a lot going for it.
Yeah, and it's like – and one of the reasons why I picked this, you know, to kind of go back-to-back with the one we did last week, because last week, you know, we did SummerSlam 91.
Yes.
And SummerSlam 91 last week, like, it really wasn't known for, like – the great wrestling. It was more known because, you know, back then it was character.
Yeah.
All right. So, like, you had the two different eras, but, you know, and the difference here is that everybody was made to feel important on this show.
Yes.
Last week, you had a couple of matches that nobody gave a flying fuck.
Yeah. I really cared about every match on this card. Everything did feel important. What would you rate this?
Jericho and Benoit, I'd probably give it a 9.
I'm going to go 8. Eric?
I'll give it a 9. This was my favorite match. And, I can't say this is my favorite match because there's a few others. There's probably two others that are in the running too. So, but I love this match. As you said, not my favorite of the three of the many matches they had, but it was a classic match. Very technical.
Yeah. Now, the next match, is that the first TLC? Is it 2 or 3 or what the fuck?
No, this is the first one. Cause
it's the first.
The match they did at WrestleMania was just the triangle ladder match.
Okay, and then TLC 2 was at the following one, right?
Yeah.
All right, the first ever TLC match. This is history. Again, a TLC 2 at 17 is my favorite, but these guys had all their TLC matches and the triangle ladder. They were all fucking awesome. This was fucking awesome. You had three teams that are known for their own shit. You have the Hardy Boys that are crazy. Like, you can see them climbing a ladder, Jeff, obviously. You got the Dudleys that are all about, Devon, get the tables. And you have Edge and Christian that are known for the concerto and hitting you with chairs. So what are we going to do? We're going to make a tables, ladders, chairs match. Great booking.
Exactly.
Speaks for itself. This is when shit was easy and not everything was done so you could do, like, cool, unique stuff like this. And the match was fantastic. Edge and Christian won. It wasn't as epic as TLC 2 to me, but I did really love this match. I don't know. I think the right guys probably won. I don't think they needed to win both of them, but Edge and Christian were great here. They were great heels. The Dudley boys were heels at the time?
No, Dudley's and Hardy's were both babyface.
Okay. So you would want either of those two to win. The Dudley boys were great dynamics to have in this match because they're not ladder guys. And that's what I was always fun. Like, is Bubba going to climb the ladder? How are they going to do this? I just love the dynamic here. I'm giving this 9 stars.
I'll pass it to Dougie now.
I'm giving it 9.5 just because I agree with everything you said. And this match, I mean, yeah, you know, it would have been cool to see the baby, especially the hometown baby faces win.
Yeah.
But no, Edge and Christian, because again, Edge and Christian had heat. They had heat because not only, you know, because they knew how to win.
Yeah.
And when you know how to do that, it helps.
Yeah, it helps a lot.
Yeah. Like, because they had the athletic ability.
This match is just pure unfiltered carnage, though.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch because everyone loves watching train crashes.
Exactly. And then that was the appeal.
It's a train wreck. Clark Rich. I love this match. I have to kind of watch TLC 2 again just to both matches are great. And I think I like this a little more because it was the first one. So I actually give it a 10 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is epic. Any true fan of any of these, especially Edge is going through a renaissance right now, and so is Christian in AEW. But both of these, I mean, if you're fans of any of these teams, you got to watch this.
Definitely. Yeah, Christian, you know, getting a shot at All Out. It's going to be cool, though, that All Out's going to be shown in the movie theaters.
Yeah, we might go see that in the theater. All right. Now, next, probably the most pure wrestling match on this card. Two people that deserve this opportunity more than anything.
Hall of Famers.
Future Hall of Famers. Some of the greatest athletes, technical superstars in the business. We have the Cat and Terry and a Thong Stink Face match. Rumor has it that they originally booked me and Doug for this, but we couldn't make it. So they did Terry and Cat instead.
Well, they originally thought about us, but because you were only 2.5, they would have gone to jail. And I couldn't fit in a thong. It cut off the circulation.
Dub.
This match was, it was what it was. It was 3 minutes of two gorgeous ladies.
Couldn't stand up in their
boots. Mm-hmm.
The worst attire of all time. Wrestling in high heels is never a good situation.
You would know.
I jacked off to this.
This wasn't for a wrestling match. This was for a sex appeal.
I'm glad Eric talked to me. But yeah, I agree. I thought it was what it was. I thought, I mean, women's wrestling has come a long way. And you put up this against like Charlotte and Sasha in the Hell in a Cell, it's just kind of funny to think about. But this is what they thought of women back then. This is, you know, and then not
if
just
if you try to put Charlotte and Sasha in something like this today, like, imagine the outrage.
Probably not in this house.
Yeah. We don't need to get into that because I'll go on a rampage in that.
What, because you want to see Charlotte in a thong stink face match?
No.
I want to see
the
Otis.
Outrage that it would cause.
Otis and Braun Strowman in a stink face. I don't even know it. Like, it's all right. I mean, this is really just a dick riser. I mean, if you watch this for that type of stuff and you want a quick stiffy in between the matches, this is for you. If not, if you're a female, you're going to want to skip this match because it does nothing but kind of tears women down. It's
a bathroom break for the women.
It's just useless fucking sex symbols. It sucks how it was back then, but that's how it was, and I'm glad it's not like that anymore, even though I really enjoyed it when I was a little guy. I'd give this match just a flat 5 stars because I think everybody tried to be entertaining. It's just the girls can't.
Well, they you had Perry Saturn and Al Snow working the corners.
They were funny though.
Oh, I love Al.
Especially
Snow.
When Snow put her crotch in his face after when he turned around and King. And it was funny because King got pissed, but you don't know by being a fan that that's his wife at the time. But if you know it, you're like, haha, he's pissed that he just tried to eat his
well,
wife.
Well, actually, here's the thing, is that do you remember Raw Magazine?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So Raw Magazine was WWF's secondary magazine. It was the adult magazine, pretty much.
Yeah.
It was Raw's version of Playboy.
Except no one was naked.
They were kind of naked, except for like, you know, the hands were covered.
Okay.
Because you couldn't actually get naked. And actually, I'm not going to get too much into that because it'll cause me to go on a rant of beef I still have with somebody from the sixth grade. So in the Raw magazine, they actually did a feature on couples that were engaged and or married. And they did put down in the Raw magazine that Stacy Carter, you know, the cat, was married to Jerry Lawler.
That's awesome.
Poor
guy stood by his woman, left the company with her, and then she dumped him. Money over chicks, fellas.
Yeah, I mean, I admire what he did. Well, first of all, they should have never fired her in the first place.
They should have?
Well, no, because even Bruce Pritchard has said that there was no...
She was a shit starter, though.
Well, according to what Bruce Pritchard had said, somebody, like, it was either the makeup artist or somebody, it was somebody that was unimportant. That said to Vince, Kat's being a bitch. So Vince went to Bruce and said, Kat's being a bitch, fire her. And he goes, is it really that big of a problem? He goes, probably not, but if she's being a bitch, just fire her.
This is that from the Jerry Lawler podcast? Because that's not what I heard. Because when I listened to that, what he said about the situation, what I heard Bruce say, maybe I heard it wrong, but what I heard Bruce say was that there was multiple situations of people complaining, different talent, makeup artists too, and unimportant. Well, I wouldn't say unimportant. They mean a lot too. But people that weren't talent, but also talent, and like, because she had a little actual beef with Terry Runnels. They didn't like each other. She didn't get along with a lot of the girls. She pissed China off. That's why they stopped having them together. So I heard that they just kind of figured out that every time there was female drama in the locker room, it came back to Kat. So they were finally like, all right, let's get rid of Kat. That's the story I heard. Well, and if that's the real story, I'd say that's warranted. And at that point,
I mean, that may have been a real story, but the story that I said is the one that Bruce told in like the latest podcast. I think it was the No Way Out 2001 episode that they did.
Okay. Yeah, the Jerry Lawler was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so, and Bruce changes the stories because he forgets what he said.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're up till 5 o'clock in the morning sucking on Vince's balls, still, you know, you kind of, you know, you lose half of your brain.
But, yeah, I give this match a 5 flat.
I give it a 4.5.
Fair?
I'll give it a 5 for entertainment purposes.
All right, Bischoff. Let's go Kane and Undertaker in a no count. Well, really, this is just a segment. I mean, it's probably the only no disqualification match that's ended in a no contest. But this is just Undertaker and Kane beating the shit out of each other. I thought it was entertaining for what it was. I really don't have much to say about it. I thought it was two tough guys that like each other and beat the shit out of each other. That feud's always interesting to me. I give it a 6.
So what I find funny is the whole segment lasted 7 minutes and 33 seconds, and the match never got started. It lasted longer than the first 3 matches. Or the first 4 matches, actually. And then the thong match. So for a match that never got started, they still got more time than half the fucking show. But I personally like this. I always thought Undertaker and Kane had good chemistry, whether they were team, whether they were against each other. I don't know, like, if I could really rate. I mean, if I were going to rate it, I'd say it was a 7.
I'll give it, since I ended in no contest, I'll give it no rating. It was just entertaining.
Okay. Main event time, boys. This is my match of the night. I love this angle. I loved Kurt Angle and Triple H feuding. I loved it being over Stephanie.
You punned.
Yeah, because Angle with Angle. I just love how it's very hard in wrestling. One of the hardest things to do is put a bad guy against a bad guy and ask people to care. Because it's hard to do. People don't want to cheer either one because they're used to both guys being scumbags, which Kurt Angle and Triple H were both scumbags at the time on screen. They both seem great in real life, but on screen. And putting Stephanie in the middle of it was smart. And Triple H, you want to say, well, we've shit on Triple H enough on this show, and everyone shits on Triple H. But for being this selfish, you know, it goes the way I want it to go, he let Kurt tug his wife. So that says a lot about him. And Kurt and Triple H have always had high respect for each other. You could tell they were friends, and you could tell they liked each other because they just had great chemistry. And for heel versus heel, even though the crowd didn't seem too into it at first, I was really hooked, and I was fine with watching them beat the shit out of each other. I popped when Rock came out, and I was still excited. And you needed Rock to be the babyface in this because it's heel versus heel, you need people to still care. So you need to put in the Rock, even though he doesn't really mean anything to the storyline, but Rock's the title holder, and Rock's the fucking man. People love The Rock. He's spectacle, so they're going to explode when he comes out. So it was perfect to have him there. And this was a triple threat match that never really had 3 guys in the ring at once. And I thought that each guy fought their ass off. Kurt Angle got concussed, for God's sakes, on the botched pedigree of the table, and he still kept it going. I loved Triple H hitting Stephanie and then him freaking out and then Angle decking him with the sledgehammer. I think the right guy won in The Rock. Everything about this match had me hooked, and I thought it was one of the more solid main events for a SummerSlam. Eric, what do you got?
I love this match too. The storyline with Stephanie was perfect, especially in that age. I forgot how good the storyline was. I actually thought Kurt Angle won this match because I remember he won later. I remember he was champion at Armageddon, but I guess he won it later on. For that Survivor Series, Doug?
He won the title at No Mercy.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't really know who won this match because I forgot. So it was a surprise for me that The Rock won. And I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
All right. Dutchy.
Okay, so this is another one of those matches. Like, I agree with everything that, like, you said about it. And I really like this match. It's one of the reasons why I picked this show, because I thought this was one of the more underrated triple threat matches, even though all three guys never really wrestled each other. They gave him 20 minutes, for fuck's sake. And then, like, everything. And then Kurt Angle, oh, my God. Like, I find it funny how, like, in storyline, you know, he was doing this and he felt like he did no wrong by kissing another man's wife and all that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like 10 years later in real life, somebody fucking did it to him.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
So it's just...
But I love the story. And I love how they play on the whole, why can't guys and girls just be friends? Because this situation happens a lot in real life.
Yeah.
Where you're dating a girl or you're with a girl and she's got that guy friend that you think is just a little too close. Maybe he'll try something. But no, he swears they're just friends. But then you turn your back and he tries something. And that's what happened. I just thought it played into real life really well.
How many times have you been on that fence?
I'm usually Kurt, but yeah, I've been there. I love the angle. I loved everything about it. I'm giving this 10 stars.
I'm going to give it a perfect 10, too, just because of how good it was. Like, and then, like, at the end, you know, Kurt got to walk away with, you know, carried Stephanie in his arms. And it's just like, everybody knows this is wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like, but, like, getting back to my point about how, like, it happened to Kurt in real life, like, you can almost just see, especially since it happened in TNA and Triple H is over WWE, he's fairly just like, hey, that's what you get for doing this to me in storyline, asshole.
You know Triple H probably had a hand in writing it.
More than likely he did, because remember, at the time, even though he was married to Stephanie on camera, him and China were still together.
Yeah. It was good shit, though. It was really good. I liked when him and Stephanie had a little strife in their relationship. All right, boys, we're heading home here. Let's do final thoughts, give this whole show a rating, and get the fuck out of here. Eric, we're going to start with you.
I thought the whole pay-per-view was outstanding from top to bottom. No horrible match on the card. As you said earlier, it was a match for everybody. Everybody's cup of tea, as I like to say sometimes. I give the pay-per-view 10 out of 10.
Okay.
I agree with what Eric just said, and like the point I made it as well earlier. I do think there was literally everything for everybody here, and it's hard to get that out of a WWE pay-per-view. If you like good wrestling, you're going to want to watch this. There's good wrestling here. If you like just action, you're going to want to watch this. There's good action here. If you like seeing girls shake tushies in each other's face, you're going to like this. It's here. Everything on this show was directed towards somebody, and it was entertaining top to bottom. I watched this within two separate days, and I never once looked at my phone because I was just into this, and that's hard for me to do. So I'd say for entertainment value, it's one of my favorite SummerSlams of all time. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. Doug, we're going to go home on you.
Okay, so it's funny this whole thing, and again, you know, doing two SummerSlams back to back, two SummerSlams that were on the opposite side of the spectrum.
Yes.
Okay. You had a family friendly SummerSlam. Well, despite the fact that the Mountie was getting raped in prison, you know, in SummerSlam 91,
and you had, you know, a SummerSlam that was more geared towards, you know, like teenagers and young adults in SummerSlam 2000. And this one to me, again, I called it top to bottom, one of the greatest SummerSlams that had ever taken place. And I still stand by it. This is actually, 91 is my favorite all-time SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, I'm seriously considering firing Eric and Stevie from the show when they shit on it last week. But, like,
sorry,
SummerSlam, Doug. That's all right. I'll probably forgive you.
I said, I hope so.
Yeah. We'll see. But, like, SummerSlam 2000 probably is the greatest SummerSlam of all time. I mean, a lot of people will probably disagree with me. But I would say that, especially, you know, fun opener, TLC match was great, hardcore match was great, you had a great 2 out of 3 fall wrestling match, and then this main event. I give it 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I agree. All right, and with that being said, this was an all-time great show. I really enjoyed this podcast. I thought it was good content, even us coming in a little bit late, but who cares? We're here. And thank you all for joining us. And Eric and Doug, I'll see you guys next week.
Well, and tomorrow for Encrypted Unlimited.
Yeah, you're not on that one.
What?
Not this week.
It's not the joke.